Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 307, recorded June 26th, 2011. I'm with Stupid. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMyPC. Accessing files on your work computer while at home or traveling is a hassle, but there's an easier way with GoToMyPC. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMyPC.com and use the offer code TWiT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by Gazelle. The easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. For a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets, go to gazelle.com and use a bonus code TWIT. It's time for TWiT, episode 307, and lo and behold, they said it would never happen. The man who will never appear on NSFW's album art is in studio with me right now, Justin Robert Young. Woo! Jury's here from the NSFW show.
I am on the album art. I'm just hiding behind Brian.
Exactly.
I'm cowering behind.
People think you're not on the album art.
Yeah, I am.
You are.
Yeah.
He also does a great show at weirdthings.com.
Yep.
Full of weird things.
Yeah, no, weirdthings.com and Weird Things, the podcast with Brian and my friend Andrew Main. But check it out, weirdthings.com.
That's awesome. Also joining us, the Scobalizer, my old friend Robert Scoble from Half Moon Bay, California, via building43.com.
What's up?
And your new studio. Well, it's not new, but you got a
new
Mac.
I keep improving little things. I got backdrop paper now, you know, over here.
This looks
nice.
And
I got a huge-ass TV that's going to go up on the wall over here. So I'm doing a studio upgrade just like you guys are.
Well, and you're doing – I noticed, in fact, I want to talk to you about one of these videos you did, but you're doing more and more of the Building 43 videos there.
Yeah, well, it's a lot easier to do videos.
Make them
than
come to you. Make them come to you. That's my motto.
And thanks for having me on. By the way, when I was walking around Disneyland last week, several people came up to me and go, "You're that guy who's always on TWiT."
Really?
And I was like, "Ow."
With all the things you do, that's what they remember.
That's awesome.
Man.
No. Scoble and I go way back. He used to run my chat room when I did a radio show in San Francisco in 1990. Was it 95?
They had chat rooms then?
Way back.
That's
way
back when
back.
You were writing for Gannett.
Oh, man. Fawcett.
That's right. Fawcett, yeah. Gannett. Also joining us, I'm so glad to have him back. And this time he's got his own headset, and I love it. Om Malik from GigaOm.com. Sounding and looking good, Om.
So your headset, Leo.
We sent you headset, and you just didn't want to use it ever.
Yeah, you know, kind of. I'm not a big headset guy. So.
You sound so much better, though. I appreciate you doing that.
No, anything for you, Leo. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's great to have you back. We've got a great panel.
Especially if I can give, you know, Robert some guff. Nothing.
I thought it'd be a good pairing.
Yeah, perfect way to spend my Sunday, right?
People don't understand that we carefully think about every TWiT episode and who we have on it. It's like wine and cheese.
Sure.
Robert and so I think of Om as a good Pinot Noir, maybe a 1998 Pinot.
Exactly.
Maybe an Opus 1.
A little bit of an earthy flavor.
Right, earthy flavor. Sure. And then I think of Robert Scoble as kind of that, what is that stinky cheese that... That you put pepper
not
and...
Not brie. Soft.
No, much stickier
like
than that.
Gouda, maybe?
Anyway, it's good to have you all here. And just real quickly, if you've decided that this isn't the show for you and you're watching live, don't worry. You could still tune in the Mario Marathon 4. It's going on right now on Ustream. Watch that. There's some people. They're drawing pictures on their head. They're playing Mario, and they've raised $61,000.
Those guys are amazing. They also do the Desert Bus for Hope charity every year, and they do these video game marathons. They're amazing, but they raise money for a good cause.
I only show this to show you that there is, in fact, a show more annoying than TWiT. No, this is good. I wanted to give him a plug.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, just for those in the chat room that were wondering where my place in the metaphor of the wine and cheese, I'm a warmed over can of Pabst Blue Ribbon that for some reason has been lofted around.
Off in the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
I like it. I like it.
Sure.
And I'm a piece of ham, so it all works. It works so very well. You did a very there was some really interesting technology news. We don't very often get big innovations, coming at us. A lot of times they are seemingly innovations like the SED TVs that we were all excited mm-hmm. about some years ago, and it never happened. But there were a couple of announcements this week that I thought were very interesting. One is this new camera that apparently has multiple lenses and multiple pickups in it and allows you to refocus the image on any point in the image. Have any of you actually seen this?
Yeah, I got a tour of this back in 2007 when it was a Stanford lab project. They're putting a grid of micro lenses over the sensor, and they're bending the light to hit different pixels. And then the processing takes place and takes only the fourth pixel, and that'll be one focus point, and the fifth pixel will be another focus point. And it's pretty damn cool.
It's LYTRO, the Lytro Light Field Camera. That's the technology they call it, light field technology. I look at something like this, and I'm always a little bit skeptical. Like, oh, come on, we'll get one, and it's going to be there's going to be something wrong with it.
There's always a catch.
There is a catch.
What's the catch?
You give up a little resolution. You know, if you have a Canon 5D with a 22 megapixel camera in there, you're going to lose you're going to get one quarter of the resolution on that sensor because they're taking four of the pixels and putting a little lens over it. So
right. That makes sense.
That's the catch. You give up a little bit of resolution to be able to refocus the picture anytime after you take it.
You know, I'll tell you what I'm really excited for with something like this, though, is when this kind of technology comes to where we're seeing the most input on sites like Flickr, which is phones. You know,
the number one camera on Flickr is an iPhone 4.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a super cool innovation, but I don't know how much it's really going to get its due until it gets to a more consumer level where...
Could you put this in a phone, Robert?
Absolutely. You could. Absolutely. I expect to see this in phones.
The key thing.
You can't?
Cannot. You cannot, what? Because in order to put this thing... The phone size has to increase tremendously. The depth of the phone.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because they're putting little lenses and taking away pixels.
Right. There's a lot of stuff which there's a lot of press about this company over the last 4 or 5 days, but not many people understand this aspect of it, that they needed a dedicated camera to get the technology rolled out.
It's
they
not just a lens. I mean, it's a big unit.
No,
and it's a software play. I mean, it is also, there is a certain kind of software which is getting embedded in your Facebook streams and all those kind of stuff. So it is not as easy as it seems. I think it's a great technology.
Not at first, Dom, but I remember when a Wi-Fi modem was this big. I saw the first prototypes, and now it's a quarter of an eighth of an inch or something on your little cell phone.
Yeah, but
aren't these going to be miniaturized, and the processor is going to be miniaturized so that they eventually can get into a device the size of the phone?
So a couple of things there, right, Robert? You talk about the Wi-Fi. The companies which came out at that early days, remember Lucent, Orinoco, Wi-Fi? Where are they? They don't make money. The guys who make money were Atheros, who made chipsets, and now they're part of Qualcomm. It took a few years for companies to start making money off this Wi-Fi technology. And I think same thing is with this company. They may have a great technology. There is a big difference between what is technology and what is a business.
Yeah.
And I think that is an issue. You know, there is another company out there. You should look them up. And I wrote about them about 6 months ago or something, called Pelican. And they have a slightly different approach to doing similar kind of tricks. But they were optimizing their experience entirely around the mobile phones and making mobile phones, with higher megapixels, higher quality, and a much thinner phone. So I think my view is that any technology which has to succeed inside the phone, not as a standalone camera. I think the era of, standalone camera is gone.
Now we're really? Just like, wow.
Yeah, I
well,
think...
There's always going to be a market for it, but I'm totally on Team Ohm here that you know that's where you're going to get the most use, and people are going to see it a lot, and the technology is going to be understood by the mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still taking my 5D to the shuttle launch. I'm not going
to
take.
Yeah, if you go to a shuttle launch, yes. But this is interesting. Look at this. This is the Pelican that Ohm was talking about. That fits inside a smartphone.
So, Robert, I think the key thing is just as you know, there are people who still write with an ink pen. And there are still people who get their clothes made bespoke. You know, there is going to be people who will buy, you know, dedicated cameras. But that market isn't that huge as it seemed like maybe 5-6 years ago.
And I totally agree with you. And if I was going to buy a camera that I was going to carry around, I'd probably buy a DSLR that had the high resolution and still put up with the focusing.
Yeah, it's not so hard to focus.
And you know, the I'm renting a 600 millimeter lens from Keeble and Shuckett in Palo Alto, and you can go to, you know, a whole bunch of lens rental places. This is an $8,000 lens, but it doesn't work on this camera.
These companies are not meant for the professional photographer or even the prosumer like you. But the vast majority of photography is done by people who are taking snapshots of their kids, snapshots of their dog. They're out of focus. The dog moved.
Yeah.
And I think if you get this in a form factor, in a phone size form
but
factor.
But I think Ohm nailed it. The camera in your phone is good enough. Are people going to carry around a separate camera?
People complain, though. I agree. I think you're right. I don't think people will. I think that right now they've already. We see it. That's why we see that on Flickr. But they always complain about how slow the camera is to take a picture.
Yeah.
They're putting up with it. It's convenience. Over quality and this isn't an ideal situation.
Well, let me ask this because I'm not super up on the tech specifically on this, but could you simulate what's going on software wise by taking you know multiple photos at multiple points like digital HDR does? I mean, could you?
Yeah, I
you
don't
could,
know.
But you know, my baby by that point would have moved.
Well, hopefully, do one of the points in which the picture. You know, is taken if you're taking multiple pictures, right?
Well, and then Ohm raises another, I think, very important point, which is you can't just look at these pictures on a website. You have to have playback software. It doesn't just go on Facebook.
Although you could, as a photographer, decide that's the focus
and then,
point.
And then image it.
And
out.
Capture that.
Yeah, render it out, yeah.
Well, I think we also have to think in terms of how, as a society, we don't really care about a lot of things, and one of those things is just taking pictures and just uploading them, because we don't really think a lot about storage space anymore. We just kind of you can take a lot of pictures on your phone, and you know pictures are not they don't have the similar value in our daily life as they used to have of when we were kids and you know somebody would come and take the family portrait. Now pictures are just like sharing experiences on a rapid fire basis, almost in real time. I mean, look at the crappy quality of photographs we share on TwitPic and ViaFrog and all things.
That's true.
So, you know, the as our idea of what a photo is changing as rapidly as the technology itself. And I think there is a bigger challenge. So look, I'm not trying to diss this company, not at all. I think any company which tries brave new technology is a good thing for Silicon Valley, especially in a world where we are overrun by Groupon clones. But I really do believe that people need to think in terms of how do you get this technology to market? Like, what is it that is going to put this in millions of people's hands? And I don't know if anybody's going to spend $400, $500 for a dedicated camera, even $200 for a dedicated camera.
Is this another Foveon? Remember how everybody got excited about the Foveon chip that was going to give us such, you know, it was a whole different way. Carver Mead figured it out to take pictures, and we don't see Foveons anywhere. Is it like that, or is it, you know, I mean, because it's certainly happened before that we've had these great tech. And this is why I wanted to
say. This could be because, you know, I'm looking at the pictures I shot at the beach today. And they have almost infinite depth of field on my iPhone. I mean, I'm sitting right next to my son.
Everything's in focus.
Yeah.
And you know, so do I feel the pain of focus that I need to go and buy one of these cameras? I don't myself, but maybe somebody does.
I guess that's the thing is that it is this technological leap forward on something that is not aimed at the market that would use it.
It's an invention
most.
That's so cool they couldn't resist it.
Yeah,
but it doesn't solve a problem that exists.
Oh, believe me, I'll buy one just because I'm a geek and I want to have something
count.
That nobody else does. But
I'm with you on that, Robert. I am going to spend money on this camera whenever it comes to market, if nothing, just to support the company. I mean, you've got to support the tech, especially people who are trying new technologies.
We need that kind of innovation.
Yeah. Trey Ratcliffe told me he's
got one. He's going to get one.
He got one because he was.
He said that
sure.
He was going to pick it up in San Francisco. He's hoping to have it for the launch. Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna use that to make different kinds of images inside the building and stuff like that, where you can refocus. And there it might make sense as a documentary kind of thing where you need a little bit different kinds of technology. But for the shuttle launch itself, I'm not going to use that camera because it's going to be it's not going to have a good enough lens. Because we're forced to be about half a mile away from the shuttle launch, and I'm going to have a 600-millimeter lens.
No, you know what? You're not going to take a picture because you're going to be standing next to Trey Ratcliffe.
No.
He's just going to be killing it right next to you.
We're going
to
bring all sorts of gear. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, anybody who takes a picture from the same vantage point as Trey Ratcliffe is just asking for trouble.
Exactly. He's going to be showing everything like, oh, I got this,
Yeah, you want to see my picture? Let me see your picture, Robert.
I got some gum stuck in the lens.
On the tricks he uses and the f-stops he uses. So.
I'm telling you, if you saw the pictures.
Believe me, I'm going. It's like a college level course in HDR photography.
The best.
Just hanging out with the guy for an hour. Okay?
And I promise that as soon as Trey can review that camera, he will do it on our Twit Photo show because he's regular on the show, and I cannot wait to see. And I can't wait to see his pictures from the launch. He did some great pictures of the last launch. It's pretty awesome. I led with this story, and I'll tell you why. Because for the same reason, Om, that you're going to buy this, I want to support these guys.
Yeah.
I think this is exciting. And then there's another technology that you kind of broke, Robert, at building43.com. You got one right there, don't you?
Well, I have they left me one of the explanations of how this technology works.
This is this is the video that you shot if you go to Building 43. Let me show this, and then you can show us the light. But the idea is... You change the way the LCD panel, the LED behind it, those are the same, but you change the way that the light gets to the LCD panel.
And that's what this shows.
Huh.
If you see.
So he's using a standard gallium arsenide LED to light these fluorescent tubes. They're efflorescent in different colors.
Yeah. Same color light, same blue light, but as it goes through the materials that bring the light to your monitor, to your eye. The better you do those materials, the richer the color. So what they did, they came out to my house and they had two iPads, one with the standard iPad 2 monitor that mine has.
Unfortunately, you can't tell on the YouTube video.
You really can't. But when you see it, it's stunning. I mean, they put a red tomato up and it's like, holy shit, that's cool.
So what I gathered from the video is that the color is more true.
It's not just more true. It's deeper. It's red. When you see the tomato on the old iPad, it's a little bit orange.
Right.
And when you see it on this new technology, it's red. It's beautiful.
So
when I first saw Kodachrome film, it's like, wow, that's
gives us
more
those
like
nice,
what my eyes
see. Bright colors.
gives us
the greens of summer.
Yes. Considering how much these monitors have kind of been like a race to the bottom in terms of price, and that's how they've exploded. Is this even price feasible right now, this technology?
Yeah, they said the technology is about the same price as what it costs right now. So they said there won't be any increase in price. The battery life won't see any increase in battery life, although they said it will increase over future technologies because future technologies, you could get maybe 10% more battery life by using a technology that doesn't have the color. And I think that's why they came out to my house was to sort of spark a conversation. Do consumers want these really hyper rich screens versus another 20 minutes of battery life on their iPad?
I think so.
Yeah, by the way, everybody who had me cursing first on this episode of Twit, you have lost your bet.
Yes,
please return the money to your office pool. Robert Scoble has cursed first.
I now have a bet that JRY will never curse.
There we go.
That's
so do I.
Bet. Yeah,
don't jinx the perfect game, Leo.
Yeah, I know. So this is the company, and I did want to ask you, Robert, because you saw it in person. It's Nanosys. Did they say that they're talking to Apple?
They didn't say. I tried 30 ways to get out of them who their first customer is going to be, and they wouldn't say. What's really interesting is today I just learned from this VC, and I forget her name. I'm sorry. I'll find it out. that there's another company that has even better technology in the wings. And so there's going to be a fight over these new monitors, which is really exciting. And I can't wait to get one of these new hyper-real LED monitors.
It's one of the things that's really great about the tech sphere, and it's fun to cover tech, is you never really know where the next innovation's coming from. And the Retina, when Apple came out with the Retina display on the iPhone, I think that suddenly started a race.
Oh, yeah.
That could end up with these with super hyper-realistic displays.
Which keep in mind, the technology I saw was on the same resolution display.
Right.
So they said if you put this behind a double pixel display, a Retina kind of display, you'll see both the higher resolution and the better color. When I saw this, when they brought it to my house, I was like, man, is that the Retina display? Is that because it looked sharper? And they said, no, it's no difference resolution. It was just better light coming through the LEDs. So the colors were richer. And the blacks were richer, and the reds and the greens and the blues. I mean, it was just, oh, my God. When you see them side by side, it's like, oh, my God. In fact, you were at the Consumer Electronics Show. Did you go by the LG booth, Leo?
I did.
Did you see the monitor that they were saying this is a futuristic technology that's coming sometime?
Was it the 4K monitor, the big 4K display?
No, or? They had a monitor there that had much richer color, and that was a prototype of the NanoSys technology.
Oh, so really? I didn't see
yeah.
that. No.
Now,
yeah.
Robert,
I
did
saw
you get,
it and I didn't notice it.
Did you get any indication on what kind of production they'd be able to go into on this?
I said, can you make me 100 million of these? And they did not blink. So
really? I mean, because that seems to
that's
be
because they knew you couldn't buy 100 million.
They're like, well, oh, yeah, know. No. What? We can do a billion. Oh, who cares?
How many do you want, Robert?
This was how I was trying to get out of them. Right. Are you talking to Apple? Because right. I know Apple's going to sell 100 million iPads next year.
Right. Yeah. So. That's been Apple's big thing with the iPhones and the iPads is just component production.
They
right?
said they can make crap loads of it. And by the way, it's made in Silicon Valley. It's not a.
It's American.
They're not going to make
hey.
It in China. They said the process of making this stuff and the ability for them to make a lot of it is pretty easy, and you can automate most of the factory, so they don't care about the lower people costs of going to the east.
Love if you want to see how beautiful that tomato can look, you better buy American.
All right, I wanted to leave.
Know, whoever puts this in the tablet first is going to get me to buy their tablet.
No kidding, you know? Sweet. No kidding.
If
Harry
you
McCracken wrote that great
Trey Ratcliffe on a future trip, you better have one of these screens.
Harry McCracken wrote that great article on this Technologizer blog about iPads and the iPad clones, saying I think a very important point: why should I buy this instead of an iPad? And,
oh yeah.
And nobody has anything compelling, but that could be. That could be exactly what it takes.
Yeah, and I was down at the Vizio headquarters and asked them about it, and they're still questioning, do people want these hyper-real screens?
Yes.
They said sometimes the colors can be too saturated, and I said, I've seen it. I put my own photos on it. I want one, so put it in there. Otherwise, your guys are going to be looking really lame when there's a screen next to it. By the way, they can make this for a huge LED, you know, 65, 75-inch LED monitors.
Yeah.
So all monitors, this company predicts all monitors will have a technology like this within 24 months.
Someday all monitors will look this way. We're going to take a break. I wanted to lead with two innovations just because it's exciting. That's why we're in technology.
Hell yeah.
Two very exciting innovations. Now we get to the meat of the matter. The FTC is investigating Google. We've got more hacks, but also word that Lulzsec is retiring. A Lulzsec arrest, could it have anything to do with that? The Winklevise dropped their lawsuit, then bring it back. There's lots more to talk about. But that's all coming up in just a bit. First, and smoke them if you got them, guys. We're going to take a little break. And I don't know why. I just assumed you would
sure.
probably. You're sure you'd put. You saw the new warnings.
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to have the.
It goes home. He's
yeah,
he's
like,
CD.
Oh, seriously? Okay, I'm going to go blow a few butts real quick.
Those new warning. They have those, you know.
In Canada.
In Canada.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop anybody.
No, not at all.
I watch people, young people I worked with when I was up there in Toronto doing a show, and They'd go out and they'd buy a carton of cigarettes with horrendous images of people with no jaw and gum diseases. And they go, yeah, whatever.
Well, I've never been a smoker, but when I was in college, I went to go to Montreal and Toronto every once in a while, and I would always buy a pack of cigarettes just because they look so metal.
They're so horrible.
It's like, yeah.
So we're going to get those pretty much the same pictures on our cigarettes soon.
Sure. Now, finally, we can import that.
That'll stop them. That'll stop smokers. We'll also talk about Final Cut Pro 10 and what's wrong with it or what's right with it.
I got it.
I got it, too. We all got it. The question is, do we want to keep it? But we'll... Zip it. I'm going to punch his button. He can't say a thing now. He's silenced. While I talk about the good people at Citrix and go to my PC. Yes, go to my PC. It's the best way to access your computer remotely, Mac or PC, from anywhere. If you're, holidays are here. The vacation time is here. I know you're going to be going away somewhere, and you're probably a little nervous. I know I always get nervous leaving the business behind because I don't want to miss that critical email, that offer to buy Twit for $500 million. It would be a shame to miss that email. So, and you know, to be honest, the worst thing is you come home to 1,000 messages in your inbox. So whenever I am away, I like to log into my computer and kind of clear out the inbox. And this is what GoToMyPC is so great for. For people who want to avoid a commute, they want to work home one day a week, they want to travel without the worry about what they're missing, this is a great solution. In fact, you can get it for 30 days right now, just in time for vacation. Go to GoToMyPC.com. Use the offer code TWIT, 30 days free. You can put it on your Mac or your PC, and then wherever you go, even an open access point, you log into your GoToMyPC account with your secure password. You're connected via 128-bit SSL, so it's completely private, even on an open Wi-Fi access spot. And there you are. You're on your office computer. You can run any program. You can send and receive email. You can access any network resource. It's just like you're there. In fact, you can even do it with your iPad. And that is an amazing thing, to be running a Windows machine on an iPad. It is fantastic. Try it free for 30 days. You'll find a lot of ways to use it. GoToMyPC.com. Use the offer. Click the try it free button. Use the offer code TWIT. It is fantastic. And we really, sincerely, we thank our friends at Citrix who are such great supporters. I said we want to have a parade from the old studio, the world's shortest parade from the old studio to the new studio. And they said, we'd like to sponsor that.
So really?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I actually drive by the Citrix building on my way to work in South
Santa
Florida.
Oh, in South Florida.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. There's a Citrix building. And I always look at there and I go, those are the folks
who go to my PC.
That's
right. The big Citrix, Ed was in like Boca, near Boca?
Yeah, just south of Boca.
Yeah.
I
forgot about
Pompano Beach area.
So, Lulzsec.
Yes. Sailing off.
Are they?
That's what they say.
So apparently earlier this week, British authorities arrested a 19-year-old kid, a kid, Ryan Clary, who people now say, Lulzsec, first of all, said he's not a big shot. He just ran one of our many IRC servers. Others are saying this kid has Asperger's syndrome. The British Serious Organized Crime Agency, SOCA, went after him because somebody hacked SOCA.
Yeah.
And they got him. Lulzsec said, it ain't us. It's just a minion. But then, shortly thereafter, Lulzsec says, and by the way, we're retiring.
Yeah. Well, they also said it was a planned 50-day voyage that has now come to an end, and they will cease the Lulz, at least as Lulzsec Security. They might filter into other organizations like Anonymous.
And where did they announce this end of their voyage?
Ah, the Pirate Bay.
And Pirate Bay. They're sailing off into the sunset. Goodbye there.
And yeah, and then they did it with a parting shot, I guess, of a few AT&T passwords and logins and information. So they went out with a bang, those Lulzsec kids. But you know, it's very, very interesting to see what they had a little bit of a keener kind of PR for their stuff than some other hacking operations have. I mean, and that's how Anonymous has always gotten attention. But they had that little wry wink and a nod sense of humor, even when they were doing things that
I think it's the Monopoly guy.
Yes. Oh no.
that's the secret to their success.
It was the why you know guy.
Yeah,
you know,
I love
in the Monopoly monocle.
Guy.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see what the general reaction is to these kind of hacking things, and then as it gets you know, more serious, you know, when morally they're just all over the place. I mean, it was just, it was a completely anti-security, amoral, anarchy.
Well, they hacked
kind of thing.
They hacked Sony because they didn't like them, but they didn't hack Sega because they liked the Dreamcast, for instance. It's like, so
exactly.
I didn't know this, but in Nick Bilton's article in the New York Times where he talks about the fact that they're retiring, he says there's six of them. Did we know that there's only six of them? Is that?
I don't know. I mean, I think Gawker had an interview with one of them, and I mean, it's with a situation like this. I mean, if you were a reporter reporting on this, and I would defer to, you know, Robert Scoble and Ohm, you know, to comment on this since they're actual journalists, and I'm just a wiener talking into a microphone.
Hey, don't knock wieners talking into microphones, baby. I made my living that way.
But you know, if obviously you're going to get any information on this from these guys, unless you have some sort of law enforcement person who's tracking them, telling you stuff. But what can you believe from somebody who says they're in LulzSec, even if you
right.
have a reasonable idea, you know?
So what do you think, Ohm? Is this real? Is this another lull?
Believe it or not, I actually have no opinion on this. None.
Zero. Why not? Why not?
What about lulls in general?
I didn't really follow the story.
You're not into hacking, huh?
You know, I mean, this is part of our online life. Things are going to happen. And, you know, I'm not an expert on this stuff, so I'm just going to shut up.
Well, we can get Kevin Paulson on to talk about it, or Adrian Lama or somebody.
Like, you know, you guys know more about this stuff.
I think Jury is a hacker. I think he's in LulzSec.
I cannot confirm nor deny that I've ridden the boat. He's the LulzSec.
How about you, Robert? You must know something about this.
No.
Nobody knows anything about this.
Yeah.
I'm the only one dumb enough to talk, even though I know nothing. No, not to say anything about them.
That's what it really is. That's what Ohm's smart. He's saying, I don't know anything about them.
Yeah, Ohm doesn't want them to even think about, you know, aiming their focus on his...
I really don't know. No, seriously. I just have not, like, you know, and I try not to talk about things I have no clue about. So, right.
Yeah. I have no clue about a lot of their work, so I have no clue about anything, but I just wouldn't do it.
Well, I mean, the only thing is, you know, in terms of them, what I think got them as much attention as they have is they kept hitting on things that are in the zeitgeist of popular culture.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, what people will most remember them for is when they hacked PBS and put the Tupac Shakur is alive in New Zealand.
That was so
thing.
Awesome.
And that's the thing is, like, you know, we look at that and, like, sure. If we all sat down and said, does security matter? Do we want to support an organization that is their only goal is to destabilize any measure of security put on in the internet? You would say, well, of course, I don't support that. But at the same time, if somebody puts up the Tupac's kicking it in Auckland, we're like, that's hilarious. You know?
I also think that one of the reasons it's interesting is because they, unlike most hackers who just seem like people, you know, vandals, kids who are messing around, or people who are just interested in learning how things work, these guys were fairly political. You know, I think we first learned about them because of their defense of WikiLeaks. And
that was the big thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of intriguing, too, that we're seeing hackers act politically.
Well, you know, the problem with that is you know, when it comes to them just hacking into the U.S. Senate site, you know, and getting usernames and passwords, it's one thing. If you get into national security and you know, if they go and because politically they are anti our incursion into Libya, you know,
right.
We have to answer for the fact that, you know, this group has compromised a military effort and put American lives in jeopardy, which is not great.
Yeah. And
Leo, I remember one of my first celebrities interviews was with Waz back in 89. And we talked specifically about this issue. And he says it's actually good for society to have people trying to break in stuff like this because it makes these systems more secure over time.
Yeah.
And that's a compelling argument for me.
I think it's a larger argument. I think it's good for society to have outcasts, to have rebels, to have irritants, because that's where innovation happens. It doesn't happen from the people who are comfortable and happy and just trucking along doing their thing. It happens from people who are on the fringes, on the outside. This is the kind of irritant. I mean, we don't know what LulzSec will spawn or create. And I admit that there are, you know, moral issues about, you know, loss of life associated with information they release. And yet I think society needs people like this to stir things up. And I kind of feel like that's what they think, too. That's why they're in it for the lulls.
Yeah, I don't know if, and you know, I have no insight into LulzSec beyond what everybody else has read and seen, but I don't know if they have a super fully formed philosophy, like if they've jotted down their declaration of lulls.
No, it seemed to be all over the place, right?
No, it was just like, hey, I can break down this, yeah, so I'm going to do that.
And maybe they added the gloss, political gloss, after the fact.
Well, and I think they have opinions, you know, and I think that they act on them. You know, what was funny to me is you know, you had another group that thought that LulzSec was getting too much publicity, and then they were a bunch of script kiddies. So they hacked into PBS just to show in a more difficult way.
It wasn't
apparently
that hard.
Yeah, that was like, yeah, they're not as good as they think they are.
Yeah. I think
the other thing is a lot of our future engineers are these kids. I mean, I remember Chris Putnam got hired at Facebook because he broke into Facebook and messed around.
That's right.
And Facebook, you know, luckily was smart enough to say, hey, this kid's really smart and he's poking around in our systems. Why don't we hire him to close all the holes?
That drives normal people crazy because they see commonly see a path from hacker to highly paid computer engineer, and that bugs the hell out of them. But frankly, if you're Facebook, who better to hire?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for certain things, I mean, you know, there's obviously, if you have a understanding of a certain system, then you can have a unique perspective on advancing that system, not only with security, but also in terms of its build and how people interact with it.
I didn't know. Geo Hotz got hired by Facebook, too. Good for them. I love that. And Bunny Wong, who hacked the Xbox, is now he's now doing the little chumby thing. So, you know, it just shows you.
Yeah. What happened with Sony, I think, was ultimately a very good thing. And for, not only
yes,
in consumer understanding of what you're going to put online, but also how serious a company like Sony needs to take security.
Well, and Sony just laid off a bunch of security people, you know, a couple of weeks before they were hacked.
Isn't there amazing irony in that they fire their security
when
people.
You lay out, this is why I know you never get the attention of the hackers on yourself,
right?
Because you lay off a bunch of security engineers, well, they know how to break into you.
We actually we were talking about this on Security Now on Wednesday, but Twit got hacked.
Really?
A very minor hack. They were able to change, we have three servers running live.twit.tv. They were able to change a line of code in the jQuery library on one of the three servers.
Uh-huh.
And I think we ferreted it out. I don't know if we have yet found how they got in, and I think that's one of the reasons we haven't really gone real public with this. Fortunately, there's nothing on that server. It's completely isolated. If you had a chat login that you were using, you might want to change that password. If you were silly enough to use the same password for Twit Chat that you use to log into your bank, you might want to change that. But other than that, I don't think there was any harm.
Well,
but the point being, we have very good sysadmins who are, and we are always, people are always trying to crack into our systems, so we're very alert. We're constantly updating software, keeping everything locked down. And even with, I think, highly accomplished experts, we still got hacked. It's not possible to seal everything down.
No.
What percentage of people on your systems use the password?
You know, I haven't looked, but that's a good question. You saw that they released where did those passwords come from? I can't remember, but how bad the passwords were.
That
would be a great Tumblr site.
Oh,
terrible passwords.
When the guys released the data from the PS2.
That's right.
People did analysis of that.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 was the most popular.
The kind of
password
code an idiot puts on their luggage.
But who cares if they break into your PlayStation account? Really? Now, Tony Blair might care if they break into his electronic address book, Hacker Team Poison. Says Tony Blair should be locked up. He's a war criminal. They're angry about Iraq. So they said they're targeting Blair and apparently released contact data from his address book, plus a nice ASCII art impression of him.
Sure. Oh, he looks good in the ASCII. Here's my favorite part about this story is that they're like, Tony Blair is a war criminal and he has murdered civilians and he needs to be tried in world court, which is why we're releasing the number of his dentist. Finally.
Well, there were some
this
members
criminal
of,
will be brought to
there
justice.
There were some members of parliament in
there.
There
were members of parliament and they wound up calling, I guess there was a number for number 10 Downing Street, which some member of Gordon Brown's entourage got a call and they're like, is this number 10 Downing Street?
Tony's not here anymore. I think that's hysterical. Yeah, CNET called the number in the phone book and talked to an unidentified representative from Gordon Brown's office, confirming it was indeed for 10 Downing Street, but we have no comment on that. That's so funny. And LulzSec hacked the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Love that.
Yeah. They did that. They did another FBI consultation firm. Yeah. They actually tried to blackmail him. They were emailing back and forth and saying that if he gave up more locations and passwords to other databases and control. It was one of the firms that helps track botnets. And LulzSec wanted information on the botnet, so I assume when they did their SQL injections and denial of service attacks, right, they could utilize those. They could fold them inside themselves, not unlike Voltron.
The latest hack, Electronic Arts says customer data has been stolen from them as well. Hackers broke into a server hosting the forum for BioWare's Neverwinter Nights. And, you know, if your password for Neverwinter Nights has been compromised, I have no sympathy.
Come on. No sympathy for the Neverwinter gamers grinding out. I mean, one minute you're drinking Mountain Dew Code Red, and the next minute you're insecure. Your stuff's out in the street. LulzSec is floating it out there on the boat.
As usual, Electronic Arts says it was a highly sophisticated attack. You never say, oh, these are a bunch of script kiddies.
Well, and that's what a lot of the other, the other hacker that hacked into the PBS thing was saying, like, this is strict smash and grab. That's what they're doing.
As you said, he did it because he wanted to show that LulzSec wasn't all that good.
Yes, exactly. Which, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on hacking, but it seems like what LulzSec has done is they found a hook. They find things that will get coverage. You know, right. PBS Frontline documentary on WikiLeaks.
Right.
The U.S. Senate, the Arizona, the Department of Health and Safety or whatever, and they smash and grab information, and now all of a sudden these things that we're already talking about on some level and already have news value now have another angle to it.
I'll tell you what bugs me, and it bugs me because it affected me. Tuesday morning, the FBI raided a data center for a Swiss company called Digital One. Mm-hmm. The FBI said it was a move to, quote, thwart international cybercrime rings distributing scareware. Now, I'm not a fan of scareware. This is the software that says, you've got viruses, buy our program and we'll save you. And, it's a real problem. But unfortunately, it was a bunch of Blade servers, and the FBI apparently couldn't tell one from the other. So they took three racks of servers, including Instapaper.
Yeah.
Not knocked offline because Marco was smart enough to be distributed to various other places, but he was brought, slowed down a little bit. And the delicious replacement that I use, pinboard.in, was off. They were running from backups. In fact, I think they're still down. So really kind of an unfortunate move by the FBI. They've not apologized nor explained, although apparently some of the servers are now back up. I think the Instapaper server is back up. But this is just, to me, this is a brute force, blunt instrument, and it's just appalling.
Here's the only thing that we don't know about this, and I was talking to Andrew Mayne on the way up here. He made the point that, we don't know whether it was an FBI thing that they just grab whatever they want, or it was the server, the places where the servers were being held, that when the FBI shows up and says, we need to pull these.
They said, well, it's over there. Go just take everything. It's
maybe,
okay.
Maybe it's a poor record-keeping thing. Yeah, maybe they just folded.
Marco left Digital One. He pulled his Instapaper account from there. He said, whether it was their fault or not, they'd ever communicated with me. They didn't tell me this is a bad company. So he's.
So, I mean, we don't know. I mean, the FBI, I think if the FBI made a mistake, then there should be some sort of apology or announcement, but we don't know. I mean, I guess I would not rush to blame the FBI as much as the server.
They shouldn't just take everything though, because I mean, maybe they were told, oh, it's over there, it's on that, take that.
I mean, if they're told,
you take three racks. That's a lot of servers.
That is.
And as Arment says, the FBI now presumably is in possession of a complete copy of the Instapaper database, including a full list of users and any non-deleted bookmarks. Passwords are hashed on Instapaper. Good news. I presume the same on Pinboard. That's just good policy. So those passwords would not be available to law enforcement unless they really attempted a hardcore brute force attack on them. And the email addresses are in the clear on Instapaper, as well as the contents of the bookmarks. So there you go. Rackspace would never have let that happen.
Right,
we
Scoble?
Have some of the best security people working at Rackspace.
Never would have let that happen.
Can I ask? I mean, like, if the FBI shows up at Rackspace, you know, is, you know, what is the policy in terms of, you know, picking out which servers are the ones that they absolutely need? I mean, do you know exactly where everything
is? That's a good question.
Yeah, in cloud it's tougher because you're sharing servers with other people.
That's right.
They would have to put a very specific request for the kind of data that they want, and then we would have to consider it. We do comply with the law, so we do turn over things. You know, but there's a very specific procedure to do that, and I can get more on it, you know, from the guys who deal with that all the time.
Yeah.
We have a lot of lawyers.
O'Malik has the inside story on Spotify's U.S. launch. We're going to get to that in just a second. And, yes, I will talk about Google and the FTC's antitrust investigation. Is it FTC or DOJ? But they're I'll find out for you, and I'll let you know. Before I talk about that, though, let me mention Gazelle.com. I know a lot of you have gadgets. Who doesn't? All of you have gadgets in the bottom of the closet, in the basement, all over the house that you're no longer using, and it's just too much trouble, and you don't want to throw them out because they're valuable, but what are you going to do with them? That's why Gazelle is here. Gazelle is fantastic. You can get cash for your used gadgets quickly, easily, fair prices, too. I get a lot of tweets from people who say, hey, thank you for telling me about Gazelle. This really is wonderful. So let's say you've got a Nokia N8 phone that you're just probably not going to use for a while. There it is. Is it functional? Yeah, no, I used it for 1 hour. unfortunately, we can't offer you any money. Wow.
Cut this part, Chad.
Oh, burn. Burn, burn. Even Nokia's N8 is worthless. They're smart. They know. Now,
there we
here's
go.
The beauty
they're
of
this. They're not going to get suckered. If this isn't an ATM, kids.
If you do have a device that they just can't sell for love or money, they will recycle it, and they do it responsibly. They use U.S. recyclers. It will not end up, not one bit of it, in landfill. It will not be polluting our environment. They really do a good job with recycling. Let's see what else I have to say. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I have a Nexus. Let me see. I have a Nexus One phone. I have a lot of phones.
Yeah, I think Gazelle is a absolutely necessary
companion.
Have you used
them?
I have not. I have friends that have, but I mean, if you listen to Twit as much as me and my friends do, and everyone just constantly
talking about
the newest.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, it's always the newest.
Oh, I
phone,
said it was. No wonder.
iPad.
I said the N8 was non-functioning. That's why I clicked the wrong button. Is it free of water damage? You bet. All right, let's see here. The Nexus One, $100. That's great.
Boom.
So now here's what you do. You get a box, any old box. You throw it in the box. They send you a mailing label, and you can add more stuff, but just get all your stuff gathered around the house, and they send you a mailing label. Yeah, I got more stuff to sell. What else do we have lying around here? Tons of stuff. Oh, yeah, the Samsung 27-inch monitor. I don't want that anymore. There it is. Let's see. Look at all this stuff. Oh, that's good. Let's sell that. Physical problems could prevent use? No noticeable flaws. That's why it got sent back, because
yes.
I said it.
You can sell that Nokia.
I bet I can get some money for that. Anyway. Oh, look at this, too, by the way.
I got to do this. I
look
got a bunch
this.
Of old Nokias
oh,
in my
Oh, exactly.
My closet.
Look at this. This is not going to be worth much. There's a graph that shows you, if you tried to sell this in February, we could have given you $10, but... Let's see how much I get for this. Nope.
No.
Nothing for that camcorder.
Nine.
So, but they'll recycle it. This is the
Can
other
I get
good
anything
thing.
For a Zune?
You got a Zune? Which Zune do you
yeah,
have?
Yeah, I got a Zune. Yeah.
All right, let's see. I have some Zune.
You can squirt it to them for the tune
is
of
it the,
some dollars.
Is it the original one or what?
The newest one, whatever it
the
was.
Zune HD? Okay. 16 or 32 gigs?
I think it's the 16.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's see how much that's worth.
You
okay.
have to pay for that, man. You'll have to pay.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. For them to take it, you're going to have to give them money.
Include right. $10 in the box.
Do you have all the materials that came with? You got everything?
Probably. I
Not
don't know.
Personalized. You wouldn't be that crazy. Okay, let's see. Watch this. $46.
$46. Wow. Look at that.
Now, here's the thing.
Mom, I'll take you to dinner.
I would have thought that could only be unmade in the fires of Mount Doom.
It's funny. While you were doing that, I was looking at the new iPod Classic 6.
Yeah.
I got you can only get $29 for that.
There you go. There you go.
So that's not good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, $29 that you wouldn't add anyway.
So you look at the graph, though. That's kind of fun. Anyway, the whole point is here, you throw this all in the box. One of the nice things is their specialists then look at it to make sure, yes, it does work and all that. But they will wipe all the data from it, too. That's part of the service. And then they send you a check. Or you can get an Amazon gift certificate. In fact, I think they give you a bonus.
Yeah. Buy more gadgets so you can return.
Well, that's what we do with this, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Buy gadgets, sell gadgets. That's it.
I don't think many of you listening are giving up your gadget addiction.
No.
Oh, no.
I mean, if you were, Gazelle would be a great place. Yeah. But I have a feeling.
You're giving it up. Stop watching right now.
You're watching
go away.
The wrong show.
There's nothing for you here.
Now, after you do all of this, I want you to then enter the offer code TWIT, and you will get, what is that?
My new Dyson Air gadget.
Jesus.
The hell is that? A vacuum cleaner? What is that?
No, it's an air multiplier. It's a fan with no blades.
Oh, I thought it was a Stargate for a second.
Safe for the kids, but
what
it looks like
a fan
like
with no.
Oh no, you haven't seen those? The Dyson.
How does it work?
Magic.
It has a fan down in the base, and it pushes air up through the circle and pushes it through.
Oh, that's cool.
It's very cool. It's very expensive though, but I had to buy it because it looked like a Mac cooling fan. And since my new iMac is so hot, I put it back behind the iMac and keep it cool.
They've got those Dyson hand dryers now in the airport where they're the blades and you run your hand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they have those at the Costco.
You got to have those in the studio, dude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Better than the paper towels.
I wonder if Gazelle takes paper towel dispensers. Anyway, get rid of all your junk. Get money for it. The average Gazelle customer, I think it's something like, let me see, it says here. $100, something like that. The N8 is worth how much did you say? $81. That's good.
$81. I know a lot of people that watch the excellent live product announcement, live coverage that you guys do on
and
Twit.
And then they go to Gazelle.
No, just dual browser windows.
Gazelle
what they're announcing on Twit
and what I'm selling on Gazelle.
What I'm going to be selling on Gazelle side by side.
They also, if you're a nonprofit, they'll set up a page for your nonprofit. You can have a gadget drive instead of a cake drive, that kind of thing. I just love it. I just think Gazelle is great. I want you to try it. And if you use the offer code TWIT, you'll get an additional 5% bonus payment at the end there, right on top of it. $25 million paid out to Gazelle customers. The average Gazelle customer gets more than $100 back for the stuff they send in. One of our chat room members paid her rent for the month with stuff she sold on Gazelle. Isn't that awesome?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Don't sell it. Gazelle it. Gazelle.com.
Although it does indicate some poor purchasing decisions in the past. She's just stocked up on electronics.
The rent money.
Yeah.
She can pay the rent.
She should vote for the rent is too damn high party.
So big scoop from Giga Ohm on Spotify. We now know Spotify's coming to the U.S., says Ohm Malik. In just a few weeks.
Ohm, did you know they signed a deal with Universal?
Well, I think everything is signed, sealed, and ready to go. It's only a matter of time before they launch it. I think they're going through the process of getting a lot of the music on their servers and stuff like that.
But so here's the thing. Here's the scoop that you had that I thought was very interesting. Facebook.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be the big play. I think... In my opinion, that changes the game for the music industry and competition pretty radically because, you know, the Facebook feed can be a pretty big driver of engagement around music. And that's going to make Spotify, you know, grow really, really fast in the U.S.
Is this why Apple couldn't get the Ping deal done with Facebook?
I don't know about that. Like, I do know that this is definitely going to, you know, cause, you know, some kind of change in the music industry, definitely in the U.S. Because I've been using Spotify for a bit, and
how do you use it? Do you use a proxy or?
Yeah, I do use a proxy, and I have to say, it just is the right way to listen to music.
Better than Rhapsody, better than Maw,
right?
Oh,
explain why? Because a lot of people, I have it too, and I've seen it go crazy in Europe. Explain why it's so much better than all the other music services that are out there.
So I think it's almost like, you know, how we with the iTunes, we went from buying random albums to buying the songs we love. But we can't buy everything, right? We just cannot afford to own every single track we like. However, with Spotify, with the subscription service, what you have is the ability to listen to the music you like, get the playlist you create on any device, on any screen, in any environment, whether it's at home, work, you know, so you don't really have to reinvent your music experience for different devices. And I think that is a huge reason why Spotify is going to become really popular in the U.S. I mean, look at us, man. We are a society where we have two or three different screens already. We have a laptop, we have an iPhone/Android device, we have a TV, you know, we have your, you know, a digital music player like Sonos. So you have a whole bunch of devices where you need the content to be delivered to. And I think Spotify has taken the right approach. I think Netflix is, that's one of the main reasons Netflix is popular, is because you can watch it on any screen, anytime, and you don't have to worry about, oh, is this the same playlist? No, it's not, you know, or not. So I think it's that experience is what travels with you, not the physical music, right?
What's really different about it than Rhapsody or Pandora? A lot of people are still arguing with you in the chat room.
It seems very similar.
No, I think there isn't, but just look at the user experience is definitely better than Rhapsody and you know, Pandora is slightly different.
Pandora, I mean, I'll grant you Pandora.
Yeah, Pandora is not
the same song over and over. You don't get to pick the music. They pick the music. You know, I like Moog. I use Moog because I could do Pandora-style stations with it. I could take my playlists with me. It plays on all my devices, plays on my Sonos.
Yeah, Brian Rushwood is frantically texting me that Moog does all that.
It does all of that.
And can go
9 million
Sonos
songs, 320 kilobit streaming audio, so it's good quality.
I will also say this, you better be careful talking about how you use a proxy for Spotify. My friend who I went to college with, Steve Kovac, who writes for Silicon Alley Insider, wrote a post about how people were using proxies to use Spotify, and the Spotify CEO did not take too kindly to that and said that in retaliation for telling people how to steal from us, he published my friend Steve's address in New York City and told people to go rob him.
What?
Seriously. I think he pulled down the blog post, but it was up there.
That
you can
incredible.
Find it in Google Cache. Yeah,
malfeasance. Yeah. I can't believe that.
Yeah,
all right.
Spotify. Go ahead. By the way, have you heard the same thing I heard from an investor or a partner of Spotify, that they're really getting greedy?
Why? I've not heard anything of that sort. And you know, I think the idea of what is greedy is kind of debatable, right? You know, it's like, I don't know, it may be what's greedy to you may not be greedy to them, right? And what's greedy to them may not be greedy to other people. So I think we have to be very relative about that. That said, there is one reason I do feel that Spotify will have an advantage over Moog and Rhapsody, is the brand recognition and the close relationship with Facebook. I think that is what is going
to be big.
Yeah, right. Well, Facebook will put it through the roof if that's true. That's huge. Yeah.
Well, the question I have for you, Om, is that, you know, the biggest thing is, and you brought up Netflix, which to me, all of my online subscription payment, relative worth to me is judged off the $8 digital only Netflix streaming.
That's kind of the gold standard.
To me, it's like I judge it above and beyond that. And right now, for it to get what I would use Spotify the most for is on my phone, like I use Pandora. And that's $10 a month. So you're asking me to pay $2 more.
By the way, what if I told you that Facebook's CEO, I mean Netflix's CEO, Reed Hastings, just joined the Facebook board of directors?
That's very, very, very interesting.
Don't you think that's interesting?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at two companies that have a great interest, you know, Netflix has always tried to understand more of what do you want to watch next so you can keep using their service. And Facebook is really good at understanding, you know, who your friends are and what you want to see to keep you involved.
It feels to me as if Facebook just wants to keep everybody in Facebook. They don't want you to leave the Facebook page. They want you to have Spotify for your music. They want you. I'm sure they'll put Netflix in there. They've already started streaming some movies, so you don't ever have to leave Facebook. Is that the strategy, O'Malik? Is that where they're going?
Well, you know, I think there is. Let's not get too carried away on that. I think what.
No, they want to be your web. They want your homepage. They don't want you ever to leave. And you know what? It's working.
Well, maybe it's not. Look, you know, what is Netflix trying to do? Netflix wants social data. That's what it wants. It wants recommendations from your friends, what movies to watch, what shows to watch. Look, whether it's music or movies, those are two inherently social activities. We about music with all our friends, family, we share. Remember, you know, back in the day when, you know, you and I had, you know, black hair, we would make mixtapes. Now we just make playlists.
Really? Right? You made mixtapes, huh?
Oh, yeah. Like, everybody made mixtapes.
That's how you'd hit on a chick.
Yeah, no, pick them up with the mixtape.
Yeah,
by the way, did you listen to the Cure track? It's pretty sweet,
it's pretty
right?
sweet.
If it worked, it was great.
I made a tape for you. I hope you don't mind. I think you'll enjoy it. I was
thinking
of you.
As crazy about turntable.fm as everybody else is in the
band? I am. I went 5 days without sleeping.
Oh, come on. Really?
When I had lunch with Ashton Kutcher the other day, and he was listening to it, and he's going, "This is the coolest thing I've ever had."
I mean, that thing can just create such opportunities.
This is better. This is Pandora only better. It's a human-driven Pandora,
yeah,
right?
I don't know if I would even put it in that thing. I don't know. One needs to fail so the other can succeed. I think this
exactly.
This is a great. I mean, I know for us. I mean, the fans of MSFW. We're partying now.
I can't turn it off.
You know, fans of NSFW, Chat Realm, you know, they've been on this since it first.
So,
you know, first
just
topped.
For people who haven't tried it, it's turntable.fm. If any of your Facebook friends are using it, you can use it. That's how they're doing it. It's a performance space. You've got five DJs, and then you could vote on the song. This song is lame or awesome. And if you get to be one of the DJs, you get to choose music. You can add songs from your own library or find songs on their library. So it is kind of like you're listening to somebody's radio station.
True, but they are, well, I mean...
The problem is it all turns into dubstep.
Yes, of course. As all does.
As it should.
Really, that is the evolution of the internet. No, you know, we go... we all eventually evolve into dubstep. You know, and Ohm, you wrote about this, right? That right now they're having a big problem overseas in terms of their licensing thing, which always seems to be the story of any kind of online music streaming service, be it Pandora, Spotify, or otherwise, that you have to, at some point, deal with these licensing issues.
Ohm,
right?
Did you lose interest, or are you still staying up nights playing?
No, I'm not playing, and didn't stay up last night. I had to get some sleep.
But I think that people do lose interest in this after a while. That's what Sarah Lane was telling me.
I don't know. I kind of feel that, you know, what's your engagement level? I think a lot of us, you know, for me, first 4 or 5 days, it was extreme amount of attention to this service. And then I found the amount of balance which I needed, like how much time I want to spend on it.
Right.
And how much time for me, this is just discovery of music. It's so much better than trying to figure out what to listen to next or put my, you know, Spotify collection on, you know, randomize, right? So this is like a lot of interesting people sharing interesting tunes. I like that. Like I'm a little bummed out about this whole, you know, access to the overseas people being denied to access to turntable, because I was listening to music, you know, recommended by folks from Brazil, from, you know, other parts of Latin America, parts of, you know, Middle East. Like, I never heard these songs, and like, I like listening to global electronic music, and it was great to kind of discover those tunes. And so there you go. I think this is the way music industry has to think of this, as a discovery mechanism, not as a way to destroy, it's not a service which is destroying value. It's actually creating more value, because I found so many songs which I ended up buying on iTunes, mostly because, you know, they were available, and they sounded great. And, you know, and some of them are on Spotify, some of them are not. And so I'm actually spending money on more music. It just is like listening to music on radio. And I hope these guys figure it out, and, you know, the turntable goes global, because the beauty of turntable is that it can actually make global music listening experience, you know, very local and very, very personal. I think
they also need a mobile.
Yeah, well, you know, that can come too. But for now, you know, I think if we are happy with just this one, you know, the listening aspect of it. But I just am a little bummed out about the whole international, you know, shutdown.
I have to say, though, I mean, that's obviously an issue that the music labels have different, you know, don't cross borders and all that stuff. And that's why Spotify wasn't available in the U.S. They had to renegotiate their deals and vice versa. But I do think that for people who, for a long time, were looking at the music industry and saying these guys don't get it, they don't understand the internet, they don't understand what's going on, they're prosecuting people instead of trying to find a new business model. This is the new music industry, and it seems like they kind of do get it, and they kind of have found a new business model, and it actually gives me some real hope for the future of music. Well, isn't this great for artists?
At least, and there is, I mean, some, if you really look at the hard numbers of how much artists get paid from streaming services.
Spotify, versus, they make very little money from, right?
You know, Pandora, they make very little money. I'm sure Turntable isn't much better just because that's the operation that they're running. It's a smaller economy, and you know, the labels on some level have to look out for those kind of rights. I would say, though, that I would be way more excited to see Facebook integrate with Turntable than I will be Facebook integrating with Spotify, because I think that those natural friend groupings that I have on Facebook, I would love to match up and, you know, with some of my friends there and easily integrate that into that experience than necessarily just get another music streaming service that I could get elsewhere.
Do you agree, Robert and Om, that this is kind of the new music industry and that they're starting to get it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wrote about this yesterday. There is an artist in San Francisco called Olga Nunez, and she played a set on Turntable. And then she shot up to number 2 on Bandcamp.
Wow.
Right? Like right there. Because I think there is nothing more engaging than an artist showcasing their own music and the music they like. I think that's what, you know, there is nothing more. You know, there's a series of albums which came out in the late 90s, early 2000, which basically had people like Massive Attack and REM playing some of their favorite, you know, almost like creating a mixtape. And I always bought those, mostly because I was surprised by the music they listened to. And I think that made me relate to them a lot more than just their, you know, their cookie cutter albums. And I think that is what music is all about. I think the SoundCloud is another service which is out there. I think the music industry is changing. And I think the idea of what was the old rules have to change. Otherwise,
absolutely. You know,
I mean, the artists have to take more control. I mean, they have to. Makes life a lot tougher for them, but, you know, it also is their battle to lose.
Yeah. Also, you know, my producer, his son is in a new rock and roll band. We went to Concord to listen to him, and there was 2 bands, and there was 15 people in the audience.
Ugh.
So, you know, there's a lot of starving musicians who are just doing it for fun right now. And if you can use these tools to get noticed and get 200 people or 500 people to listen to you, now you're starting to build a business out of it that's better than just playing a bar.
Are a lot of artists, I think this is interesting, I didn't even think about this, Owen, but are a lot of artists doing their own turntable.fm rooms and performing their music in?
Well, I haven't seen very many.
That's brilliant.
I think if like somebody like Kanye came out, this thing would just go blow up. I mean, completely. This would be huge. And I think that's what we need, is somebody of that stature to show up and just start pushing it.
Well, the bigger this gets, the more you're going to attract attention like that, and the more you're going to get the celebrity, you know.
But it isn't the Kanyes of the world who really need Turntable. He doesn't need it to sell music.
No.
But people like Olga, this is a real opportunity for her to find an audience and to play her music and to get people excited about it and buy it. That's great. And there are probably a lot of mid-tier artists.
Well, and also, I mean, Kanye, you know, runs a imprint, I believe, I forget on which major label, but it's like Good Music or whatever. Yeah. He's got younger artists. He's got new artists that he's trying to break on that label. If he goes onto a Turntable FM room, starts playing some of his hits, you know, it's Gold Digger and it's, you know, some of the hits there.
And then
he plays another one. Yeah. I mean, that's the cool thing about Turntable, is that you hear a song you like, and then a new song that you hadn't heard before that's similar to this, but it's curated by people who have similar music tastes and not an algorithm like what Pandora is. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of it.
Very intriguing.
And I'll tell you, in the music industry, at least the floor has not completely fallen out like it is in the publishing industry,
right?
Where you have, you know, these ebooks coming out
right.
at $1 to $3, where they there's no way that they can compete on that. Like there is just in their business model, it is completely, you know, they can't go that low.
I think it's very similar. And I, you know, somebody just said it. If you if they just on CNBC had somebody from the RIAA on, and no, the music industry still does not get it. And I think that there's pockets of people in the music industry who get it, and then there's a lot of people who don't get it. But I think this is the opportunity for the music industry to find new business models to survive. Is Best Buy a big player in all of this? They're going to do a cloud service.
I'm sure it's going to be as good as their buyback service.
It reminds me when Walmart was doing something similar.
They should have.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy.
They should have named their cloud, "Hey guys, us too, right?
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah,
us
we're,
too,
we're
high
in
five?
There. Yeah, we got a cloud. We got a cloud."
Yeah, I talked to Best Buy CTO at the Google I/O conference, and he said, "Hey, look, we have three aisles of stuff, all the CDs and things.
They still sell CDs, yeah.
That are going away. So they're trying to find a new way to integrate that into their customers. It's a tough thing for them to do.
I tell you, I would not want to be a brick and mortar store selling anything that you could buy online at this point.
I would disagree with you on that. I think they have to think differently about their business. And just because, yeah. you know, that's the problem with the music industry. That's the problem with the book industry. That's the problem with the physical stores. They don't understand that digital is part of their existence.
Yes.
Digital is a way, it's a channel. It is a way to get more engagement with their products. It's physical store. Apple is a physical store, for God's sake. You just go there. There is so many people. What are they doing? They're engaging with the products. You know, they're not just in the business of like selling, you know, CDs. They're in the business of engaging with their audience, getting them to, you know, appreciate the product and then buying it. And I think that's all the successful retailers have done that in the past.
Can a Best Buy do it? I mean, I could see an independent music store, an Amoeba Music, can survive. I think a great independent bookstore like a Powell's Books can survive because they provide service, they provide a locale where people gather. But who's going to go to a Best Buy to find out what great music is available?
I think for the cloud thing, I totally agree with Ohm that they have to innovate and they can't just think within
just
how do we sell
as
more
a brick
widgets
and
inside the store. I don't know. I mean, to me, I don't know what the solution for Best Buy is. I don't think that their solution is chasing taillights and saying, you know, Amazon's got a cloud, Google's got a cloud, right. Apple's got a cloud, we got a cloud, we're the Best Buy cloud, come here.
Well, you know what you don't want to be is the store that people go to look at the thing and then go home and buy on Amazon.
Well, I mean, that's
that's
that
who
is,
Best Buy
that,
is.
That is a general problem. And, you know, I think Andrew May just texted me that the only cloud they're going to is the one that Circuit City ended up.
But you have hope for them, Ohm. I'm glad to see that's.
So I actually wanted to just, complete the circular. I wrote a post about 7-8 months ago called "There Is No New Media; It's All New Consumption." And I hope, you know, I think the point I was trying to make in that is that we have to stop thinking in terms of, you know, isolated products and isolated devices and isolated sales channels. And we have to think in terms of a bigger ecosystem and build a business based on that. I think somebody like, you know, like Amazon, in my opinion, should start a physical store which showcases their digital goods and creates an experience around that. And I think that is where we will end up.
Interesting.
This is very painful.
Do you think that's going to happen after they kill the tax benefits of getting stuff out of state?
Yeah, they can't open stores until then because you'll have to pay sales tax all of a sudden.
Well, you know, I don't know when that will happen, but they will eventually have to move to that place just because.
I would have mocked you, Ohm, when they said that, but then look at the example of Apple and its retail stores.
Apple's
huge
been,
success.
Apple's been very, very smart. And the other thing that Apple has is they have a very, very small product line. They know exactly what they're selling, and they know exactly how to sell it.
I guess you couldn't put everything in Amazon.
No,
in a store.
No, you could not. I mean, I think there is a place where you can showcase what Amazon does well.
But
I don't know if that's
Amazon could buy
then.
Costco or Walmart.
They need to.
Again, you're thinking about Amazon store as an experience of like buying a physical products. Yeah. What is it that Amazon can do? It can provide an Amazon space where people can engage with Amazon services, whether it's tablets, Kindles, whatever. It can provide a place where its authors can go and give talks and read from the book. I mean, look, those things are very important for publicizing a book and, you know, for getting a book in the hands of people is the, you know, the book tours or having an unplugged performance of an artist in an Amazon space who's trying to sell digital music on Amazon.com. Amazon will have to do it as it will, you know, become more and more important in our life. As a company, it needs to kind of have that local presence. And also, remember, we are in a living in a world where we have an iPhone or a smartphone in our pocket all the time. So for the retailers itself, it's a very competitive market. Like, you know, there are certain apps which can basically let you check the price and, you know, order it online while you're looking at it in a store. So the stores have to think in terms of what is the plus experience they can offer so that people come to the store and buy their things. And same is with Amazon too. They need for people to keep buying from them, but they need to create a whole experience around it. I think, you know, I'm clearly maybe a few years too early on this whole idea, but
I think you're a few centuries too late. But okay.
Well, I mean, I don't understand from what you've said what Amazon.
I see no compelling reason to do this.
Well, and what they can't do for, and I think, you know, putting out authors and everything and introducing them so you can buy stuff on your phone is an interesting idea. I just don't know why you need to have a physical space and you can't partner with other places.
I think about
why do you have to pay rent every month?
How do I buy something? I don't buy it because I went to a physical space and I participated somehow in the experience of it. I ask friends. You do?
Oh, absolutely. I bought Apple gear from online from Apple and from the store. And I buy it because I know I can
only buy
it
from the store if I have to have
real.
It right now. Absolutely. But maybe because I hate people. But I,
you know, I have a 24-inch Apple monitor that is going back to them. And I can take it. You know, it has a flickering problem with this new iMac. And I can take it into the store and show it to them. You know, instead of trying to convince somebody over the phone.
So what you've just described is a tech support depot.
And that's a big deal about Apple. I mean, look at how hard it is to get a spot at the Genius Bar lately, you know?
Yeah, no, Apple stores are jammed. Apple stores obviously work.
Yeah. And also, they make their own product.
They make their own product. They have a constrained product line. They can have every single item in their product line in the store.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love independent bookstores. I love going to author readings and author signings. I love that idea, but I see them dying right and left. And
that is exactly the reason. I mean, if Amazon, the bookstores die and we become a culture where only the top 50 books are the ones we hear about in the media and they're the ones which are getting sold, then we have a problem where a lot of the newer authors don't get discovered. What I'm trying to say is that, you know, let's stop thinking about retail as like a physical space where you go and buy physical goods. You will still do what you do on Amazon online, but what if they do need to have a place where their business is still books and music and...
Oh, yeah. That's called Starbucks.
Well, so, Starbucks or Amazon's own store, it's not such a radical idea.
I think you do a deal with Starbucks.
Yeah.
Home
is ahead of his time. I think when the sales tax advantage that mail order retailers have over brick and mortar retailers, when that goes away, Amazon's going to feel very much more likely to do this kind of concept where they want to have high touch with their customers.
I think you look at what Barnes & Noble is doing right now is that they're creating more and more experience around their, you know, stores. They're shutting down the ones which are not working, but they're creating this, you know, more of an experience and less of like, stocking books there. And I think that's exactly what I'm trying to tell you guys. That's where Amazon will end up. Or if not Amazon, somebody else will end up trying to do that because that is important for the whole ecosystem of books and, you know, music and, you know, those kind of things. Starbucks maybe, but Starbucks doesn't cut it. Like, look at, they just want to cram as many people to sell coffee, right. And this is a slightly different way of thinking about it, right? So,
but I see shopping malls full of stores that you can get stuff online for cheaper. People still go into stores. They still love shopping. I personally don't love it all that much, but, you know, talk
you're gonna,
to my
look,
wife.
You have to shop for clothes. No, you have to shop for clothes in person.
All sorts of stuff. Clothes. You know, you don't have to shop for clothes in person. You can buy all that stuff online.
Well, I mean, it's a longer process. It's
chicks
to
like
go.
To try stuff on.
Oh, chicks. I
was
it,
behind
please.
Two chicks at Ritz today. They were talking about buying shoes
I
online.
Apologize.
They said they save 20% by buying them online, and they can get a better deal, and they have better service online. You know, it's I don't know. You know, I see malls full of stores for a reason. And yeah, you know,
I see
Amazon
malls.
At some
wait
point
minute,
is going to wake up
wait
and
a
want
minute,
that
wait
high
a minute,
touch.
Wait a minute. Where is Rackspace? Where is Rackspace headquarters?
San Antonio, Texas.
In what?
In a huge shopping mall.
That died.
That died. They
and
bought,
is now,
they the
is now in a perfect metaphor hosting Rackspace.
Internet, yes, internet commerce. You know, I really... I don't know how our idea of a retail experience changes when we can do everything on our phone. I think that there's always going to be a room for a physical presence, but it
sounds like you guys are describing a social space, not a store.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know who
stores are social spaces.
That is exactly what I've been trying to tell you guys. It's exactly the same thing. It's not the physical sale of the goods, but the concept of books. You know, like. The things which go along with the books, which need to happen in a physical space, things you know, a social space for talking about music or you know, unplugged performances from small independent artists, those kind of things is what a retail experience needs to have. And also, let's not forget, guys like Amazon are also making more and more, you know, devices now. They're going to make tablets and they're going to make Kindles and who knows what next, right? It's not, you know, that inconceivable for them to actually start making more devices as endpoints for delivery of their digital content. So they need to create a bigger experience around that as well. Yeah, you know, it is, that's why I'm saying is don't think of it as the bookstore as you know it right now or a retail outlet as you know it now, but think how would you reimagine it for the next 50 years, not for what it was for last 150 years, but what it will be. You know, I think the idea is we always get caught up in how the past is going to define the future. That's never the case. So if you were to do a new kind of a, you know, social space around the idea of books and other kinds of content, how would you do it? And I think the company which is very well positioned to do that is Amazon, not Starbucks, because that's
well
not...
think of IKEA. I mean, go through IKEA, it's like a maze, and I you know, I love looking there. I would never buy that kind of stuff online because I couldn't see it.
It's also expensive to ship. I mean, there's some things that will stay in brick and mortar. I don't know. I think you guys, it's like
next there'll be a town common,
and we'll all be walking to work. And it just doesn't, it sounds like a nostalgia for a pastoral past that I don't think is, I think it's gone. I think people are going to stay in their houses. They're not going to come out anymore.
No.
They're going to buy everything. It's going to be brought to them by a uniformed employee of the federal government.
Sure. We're all going to be like, Howard Hughes. Line up the bottles.
Exactly. I think that while I agree with you, Ohm, we it would be good for us to expose new artists and get to know each other and all that stuff. That's not where we're headed.
Yeah. And another thing to think of is, you know, Apple Store versus a prospective Amazon store. Even if you're buying stuff online and you have a limited amount of employees there that you're paying out, is, you know, the Amazon price for the average price for an Apple product is in the hundreds.
They make a lot of money.
The average price for an Amazon purchase is in the
all
tens.
I have to say is Facebook,
low tens.
Facebook, 750 million users according to TechCrunch. Facebook's not confirming, but that sounds about right. 750 million users. That's our new social experience, and it's one sitting behind a screen in the comfort of your own, you know, cave.
Sure.
That's what people want.
As you
oh my, I wish you were right, but
tremble,
I think we're
terrified.
Time will tell. All right. I think, you know, we are being dismissive of the physical space too soon.
The human nature requires it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just look at the number of people who live in urban environment, and like you do need to go out and, you know, intermingle and, you know, mix with the other people. I mean,
Leo, why are you building this really cool studio for us all to travel and hang out with you? It's cooler to hang out face to face.
Well, a handful of people, but most people experience it over the internet.
I
just don't know if it's worth the rent. I mean, I agree with all the things. I agree with everything that you're saying, Om. I just don't know. You know, if when it comes down, every single month.
Have you bought a brick yet for? I think you should
Bricks.
Be buying.
Twit.
You should I'm be looking buying. At it. $600 something, right?
No. Well, if you want the logo,
I want the logo, baby.
You could have a Building 43 logo on a brick. We would love that, actually, if you did that.
How much is that?
Go to bricks.twit.tv. I think it's all there. It tells you everything.
That's 600 and something.
I have to apologize for our international viewers that we don't have a better way to buy internationally. You have to call that 800 number. It is toll-free. You can call it via Skype, so it won't cost you anything to call. I admit. I know. See, this is interesting. This is an example of what I was talking about. You can order internationally. You merely call that number, and yet I get constant emails from our international audience saying, can't I just order online? I don't want to talk to a human. I wish to order from the internet. So, yeah, 8x8 brick with a custom logo, $640. But you're worth it.
Do we know where this brick's going to be? Are you going to put me in the bathroom? Or are you going to put me out
front? You could be anywhere you want. I'll put you where you want to be. This is what the Twit logo looks like on a brick. They do a really nice job. They laser cut this.
They're fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, they laser cut this into the brick. We will have a limited number of these. I think there's only 200 total of these, so don't wait too long, Robert.
How many you got left?
I don't know, but I think there's I think there's 198 left.
Okay.
No, I don't know. But these don't sell real fast, as you might imagine.
Come on, man. You got a lot of fans.
Most people. Oh, we do. And you know what? We've sold 1,000 bricks, but most of them are the $128 bricks. And, you know, you will love seeing this wall, Robert. When people come to the studio, there's memorials to parents. Somebody wrote, push here to open wall. I mean, there's just some great stuff. I'm with stupid and an arrow pointing to the brick to his left.
That's awesome.
Some great stuff. So it'll be fun to browse our brick garden. And to answer your question, Robert, it's in the entryway. It's right there when you first come in. So
I know John Salina, Jammer B, who's...
he's got the Diamond Club bricks.
He's got the diamond...
TK wants me to right wants there. My brick to be behind the toilet paper holder.
I can put it there if you wish. Actually, you know, we were going to, and we haven't gotten around to it. We might still do this, sell naming rights for my studio, for the bathroom.
Oh, like a stadium?
Yeah. So
you
it'll
know,
be, you know.
The Twit Brickhouse Bathroom brought to you by Justin Robert Young.
Yeah. That's so awesome. Watch for that later in an eBay auction near you. But this is the... the bricks are for sale now, and last
I'm calling dibs on the plunger. By the way,
don't wait too long because we've got to, you know, before we open the studio, we've got to install these bricks. So it's literally a matter of weeks before we cut off sales. Bricks.twit.tv, and it's not a nonprofit. There is no tax deduction. It is merely a way of giving you a chance to own a little piece of the Twit Brick House and to support Twit. We actually, the money that we're raising with this is much needed. We're putting it into cameras, into lighting, into a lot of things that we really need to buy in the studio. So thank everybody who's...
Better headsets?
Say again?
Better headsets?
Better headsets.
Yes.
Would you like a better headset, Om? Are you unhappy?
Who wants to sponsor Om's headset?
We bought Om his headset.
Yeah,
we could have sponsored headsets.
Om's sounding pretty good on that headset.
Yeah, it's a lot better. A lot better, I have to say, Om.
Just very uncomfortable, that's all.
You know what? Come to Petaluma. We'll get some nice... you can't drink wine. I'll get some nice iced tea for you.
Yeah.
I can have a glass of red once in a while.
It's good for your heart, Om. It's
yeah, once in
heart.
A while it's okay. Fine. I have some nice scotch I'll bring up for you.
You can drink scotch?
There yeah, I can see you drink. You
Wait
know, like that.
Yeah, why weren't you in the studio this week?
Yeah, I know we have some good scotch over here. Did you want some scotch?
No. I would bring some for you.
That's probably a bad idea.
Well, thank you. We would love it if you'd come up. And I think you're right, absolutely right, Robert. One of the reasons we are building such a nice place is because we want a sense of space. We want a place that people want to come up and visit. And that's absolutely the truth.
It's going to be the tourist attraction in Petaluma, man.
Well, you know, you can see it from the street. We have the windows are the studio's right on the street. We have these big portholes you can look through.
They look amazing.
They're pretty cool.
They're so cool.
Yeah, I drove by it the other day. It's
come over.
Pretty good.
Come over. Well, I'll give you a tour the next time you're in town.
I'm going to be there when you launch. I'll be at the launch party.
It's just a few weeks off. We're very excited about it.
You're going to close down that whole block, man.
You know, we actually inquired. We went to the police department. They said it's too big a street. We can't close it down. So we'll just fill it with people, and then cars can try to get
deal through. With it, pigs.
Yeah. Deal with it,
hear
pigs.
Hear that? We're calling you out.
The Petaluma pigs. That'll help. Now, there'll be no problem getting that parade permit.
No. Nope.
Thanks, jury. Thanks. You said you had an audible pick. Let's do a quick audible.
I do.
Ad. Yep.
It's funny. You know, I'm reading a book, and stop me if you've heard this one. It's about a startup in an emerging industry that has dedicated, they have this brilliant idea that they want to talk about one subject 24 hours a day. It's a niche subject. People don't really get it. They
sounds
say
like Twit.
Fail. Let's say, theoretically, also, that they've decided to build their headquarters north of where everyone says the action is.
This is
that
us.
They're out in the sticks.
This is us.
That company is ESPN, and they are now the
Bristol,
most valuable.
Yep.
The most valuable commodity in the Disney organization.
They are absolutely my role model for what we're doing.
And yeah, and they have the new book that just came out as written by Andrew Miller.
I can't wait to read
Tom Shales. It's an oral history. If you've ever heard their Saturday Night Live book, it's just like that. I mean, it's a little wonky sports wise. So if you're not, you know,
no, but these guys are so creative. I've got to read this because I think you're right. This is the inspiration for what we're doing here.
And that's, it's funny because, you know, I'm coming out here, I was going to be on the show, and I'm listening to this. And I'm like, oh my God, there's so many little you know, connectors to this and the Twit story. And, you know, they proved, you know, a lot of people wrong in the process. We're really pioneers in terms of getting cable subscriptions. You know, it used to be that cable company or cable channels would pay in to the cable networks to get their programming on, that it was like the broadcast model, and they ESPN completely turned that on their head. And you know, I really do
pick.
Believe.
Thank you. Those guys have all the fun inside the world of ESPN. I did read the Saturday Night Live book they did. It was fantastic.
So good.
I love
so
Tom
good.
Shales, so I can't wait to get this.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I will say, and I love Audible. Let me just say about Audible, it is it completely runs my life. The Audible app, if you don't have it on your phone,
awesome.
You absolutely need to get it. And they're just great. The only thing I would say about this audiobook is that Andrew Miller, who wrote the book, does a lot of the connective narration. So he doesn't.
Does he talk like this?
Sometimes it's better to hand it over to the pros.
Yeah,
and,
I know what you mean.
And do that.
But
it's not bad.
Unlistenable, is it?
Oh, no. Okay. It's good. It's good. And the content is fantastic. It's a long book, and a lot of it deals with the early, the forming of the network, as well as the newer stuff, like the Aaron Andrews sex tape and all sorts of other
stars on the ESPN Walk of Fame.
That's him. Yeah.
On the Super Summer Afternoon. Berman, practically the network's avatar.
He's a little gravelly.
Yeah, and again,
he should just clear his throat.
Well, and there's also a few stutters and stops and everything. So it's fine. But ESPN, those guys have all the fun. Check that out.
Now, you can get it for free. Actually, I'm going to give you two books for free if you go to audible.com/twit2. That's what I do. I have this is the Platinum account, two books a month.
Yes.
Best way to do it, because you pay the subscription price, which is a lot less than the a la carte price. And you get two books a month. You don't have to listen to them all at once, by the way. And this is, as you say, the Audible app for Android and iPhone is fantastic because your entire library is on here. And so you're just collecting books. If you don't read it this month, no problem. You can get it. Like, I have War and Peace. Look at this. War and Peace is like 18 volumes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hundreds of hours.
Robert's holding up the last book I listened to on Audible before I started listening to.
What book is that?
The ESPN book. That's, that's
Stephen Levy's
In the Plex.
Excellent.
Which is awesome and amazing. And he is my favorite. One of my favorite nonfiction authors. I'm a huge nonfiction guy. He is great. His book about the iPod was fantastic.
The next new thing, or
the perfect thing, I believe. Yeah. It had my favorite descriptor of Steve Jobs ever, which described him walking into a meeting with all the record companies as they were getting the iTunes stuff together. And he walked into the meeting wearing, as described by Stephen Levy, in ball-high jean shorts.
I remember that.
It's just my favorite thing ever. Whenever I look at Steve Jobs on stage, I'm like, that dude walked into a meeting with record labels with ball-high jean shorts.
Stephen Levy is one of my favorite writers, too. In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives. This is great. Some great anecdotes in here. There's two books for you.
Boom.
And they're yours free. All you have to do is go to audible.com/twit. To sign up for the Platinum account, no charge for the first month. You can cancel at any time, but two books is enough to get you pretty far down the road. I have get this in my library. I've been listening since 2000.
Yeah,
I have 500 books in my library. which is just really just fantastic. If I show all the books, 200 items per page, it still fills up several pages. New on the Kindle, by the way, you can also download directly to the Kindle.
Oh, for Audible stuff.
Yes.
That's cool.
Isn't that awesome?
That's very cool. Yeah, no, it's so good. And it was funny. I was at a Barnes & Noble a couple days ago, and I looked at their books on tape thing. That's one of the things that really kind of stopped me from getting into Audible for a while is because I just thought, you know, all the things that were lame about books on tape were just kind of transferred onto
digital
media. Yeah,
I used to get them, the cassettes and the box of cassettes.
They have that ESPN book on 28 discs.
Yes, it's long.
For like $45. Yeah. And it's like competing with Audible where I can download it immediately.
On your phone.
I have my subscription. Boom, on my phone. Listen to it immediately.
I agree.
It's no contest.
No contest.
Audible.com.
Thank you. We thank them for their support.
/thank you,
jury, for your incredible. You do really good commercials on NSFW.
Oh, stop. You're going to make me blush.
No, I'm telling you. You're keeping some of our sponsors would have left us long ago.
I think some may have left because of the sponsor reads.
Well, the Mail Route guys love what you do for their.
I know, but they haven't sponsored since.
No. We put them on hiatus because we didn't want to overdo
okay.
it.
Yeah.
It's
no,
not
I
their
love,
fault, it's us.
I love doing the Mail Route, read. That was
maximum
so,
no
so,
spam.
So, maximum no spam.
Yeah. So if you're an NSFW listener, we were going to change the name because we thought people weren't listening to the show because it was like not safe
they
for
thought
work.
It, yeah, they thought
but
it
was
is. Hardcore
But it's completely safe for work.
It is. No, I think we've now changed it colloquially to nominally safe for work.
I wanted to change the name entirely to something, but we couldn't come up with another name.
No, I know.
And then it's entrenched now. It's a great show. Brian Brushwood, Justin Robert
terrible.
Young, twit.tv/NSFW. And you're going to do a special live edition in moments.
Yeah, we're going to be live here in the Twit studio. We're going to Skype Brian in from Maine. We're going to have the Jonathan Mand and his Songatron band playing live.
We have set
right
up,
here.
And I feel sad because if you had done this 3 weeks from now,
I know
we would have this beautiful stage and we could set
we could
this
big,
up.
The big swoopy, the American Bandstand. I could be Dick Clark.
The soundboard's on the floor. I mean, it's going to be horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. No, Jammer B has set up.
Jammer
this great
B's working
studio.
Hard to get some.
Yeah,
press
for him. I think Robert wants us to get a little bit into the Final Cut 10. Do we have time?
Is that what he's showing us?
I believe so.
All right, I got two big stories we're going to cover. We got to talk about Google's antitrust, but let's talk about Final Cut Pro 10.
Yes,
Apple on Tuesday surprised everybody, making it available. We knew it would be available for $300 in the Apple Macintosh App Store. They separated motion out, that's $50, and compressor out, $50. You all saw the Conan editor's take on this, in which they said, well, it's the funniest piece I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. I don't want to spoil a joke. Are we going to play it? Or
should I play it?
You can. All right, so Conan, of course, on his TBS show, is plugs in this Final Cut 10 thing. Because really, it is no city is going crazy about this like L.A. is because of all the production.
I thought
it was
amazing that they felt like it was a mainstream enough story that they could make a joke about it on Conan.
Yeah, yeah. And partly it says something about the fractionalization of what we find
Apple
funny or what he would want to put on there. But here, we can just throw it there.
Final Cut Pro. But apparently it's so different from the last version of Final Cut. Video and film editors all over Hollywood are having a very hard time adjusting to it, okay? Well, our editors here at Conan are some of the best in the business. They actually like the new software. In fact, they prepared this video statement voicing their support for the new Final Cut Pro.
The audience is already laughing.
Hi, I'm Dave Greku, one of the editors here at Conan. We actually really like the new version of Final Cut Pro. We used it to edit the video you're watching right now.
Hey, this is Dan Dillon. I'm the interface for Final Cut X.
Best of iTunes and iMovie, all right.
It's all mess
Final
up.
That's great.
Hey, my name is
so
Robin.
You get the idea. Yeah, that continues on with bad editing, bad titles. Robert, you disagree?
No.
Is it terrible?
It depends how you're coming at it. I actually like Final Cut Pro because I'm not a professional video editor. My producer, on the other hand, who does edit my editing, he hates it. And
really?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't have multi-camera support. It doesn't take in files from the old version. It didn't have some exports he needed and stuff like that.
That was the worst thing. If you have any legacy stuff, anything you've edited in Final Cut Pro Studio, you can't open it.
Yeah.
You have to keep a totally rewrite. my main problem with it is that they should have called it something else, like
iMovie Pro or Final Cut Express, which is a product they've replaced, which is the same price. And really, this is a logical replacement for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's the biggest thing is for professionals who love Final Cut and live on Final Cut. This was a super jarring thing. I think David Pogue actually did a great job of sort of listing, separating what actually is not on Final Cut 10 and what is just harder to get
he asked Apple and Apple gave him the information and he put it on his.
Well, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good resource.
It is a good resource. It's kind of an apologist for Apple, but that's all right.
Nah, yeah, I agree.
It's good information.
Let me just say, I did some original reporting for Twit.
Yes.
And I have a bunch of friends because I've worked, me and Andrew have worked in television before. We did G4's G4 Underground documentary series.
You worked at G4? Oh, I'm sorry. You can't be here. We'll see you later.
Oh,
thanks.
Come on. Goodbye. No, don't worry. We have very similar experiences. But I've made a lot of friends, and I emailed one of them, I texted one of them, and I asked to ask around to some of her professional editor friends to describe Final Cut 10 in one word. So these are all editors for NBC, Discovery.
Professional
editors. We have, does WTF count as one word? nice try, Apple, put into one word. And then apparently 14 people saying a word that I can't say on Twit, but has B-U-L-L and then ends with I-T.
Oh, yeah.
So not exactly happy, the LA editing community.
I thought this was interesting. Daniel Jacut, who is a Apple developer who does...
I live on Mars Edit.
Yep, Mars
live
Edit.
Live on Mars Edit.
Red Sweater software. He had I thought the tweet kind of said it all. He said, Apple will happily piss off 5,000 professionals to please 5 million amateurs. Is that what happened, Robert?
I think so, but they really screwed up by naming it. Because the amateurs who like me who came through iMovie, we don't care that it's Final Cut Pro, although that did get me to download it and spend $300.
Well, that's part of the value proposition. What, this was $1,200, now it's only $300? I'm going to buy it, even if I don't need it.
Yeah, except it doesn't do what Final Cut did. I mean, you know, I use two cameras on my show, and it's hard to use that.
Well, David Polk says you could still do a two-camera multi-camera cut. All you have to do is put them both in the timeline, and then whatever you cut out will show up in the second thing. It's not that hard, you know. It's like, come on, Apple, just admit it. You took it out.
I think it was rushed out. I mean, Apple deserves to catch hell on this in the same way that they deserve to catch hell on the Mobile Me stuff when that was completely, you know, not functional. But I think the final word has not been written on Final Cut 10. I'd be very curious to see where it is.
If you come at it from iMovie, it's faster than iMovie. The quality's better than iMovie. And it has a lot more features than iMovie. Of course, it's $300 instead of how much did the iMovie cost us? $50 or something?
It's basically free.
It's free.
On
the new Mac. I mean, I will say, like Robert, when everybody was like, "Oh, whatever, it should be iMovie Pro," and I'm such a noob, I'm like, really?
Sounds good. iMovie Pro.
iMovie Pro, you say?
Well, we're going to talk about this quite a bit on MacBreak Weekly, as you might imagine. It came out the day MacBreak Weekly came out, so we talked a little bit about it, but we hadn't had much chance to use it. Alex Lindsay's Pixel Core did a whole evening on it on Thursday. Larry Jordan, who is considered by many to be the god of Final Cut, one of the most accomplished Final Cut trainers out there, will join us Tuesday on MacBreak Weekly. And we will talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly with Final Cut Pro 10.
Nice.
This is just, to me, this is Apple. This is what Apple does. Apple is completely willing at any time to say, hey, see you later, past. Welcome to the future. And if it pisses some people off, it does. That's both their strength and in some ways a weakness. It's part of their arrogance.
Yeah.
And I think this is what makes Apple Apple. I've never seen Microsoft do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a complete rewrite. It works on multi-core machines a lot better.
It's Cocoa. It's 64-bit.
But it'll take a year or two for them to react to all the complaints and get the features back.
Well, that was mostly what the David Pogue apologia said was. Oh, no. Apologia. It said, well, no,
sounds like an Italian
add
city.
That. They're going to add that. Yeah, it is.
Apologia.
It's near Trieste. He said basically, oh, they're going to add that. They're going to add that. Or you can get a third-party app for that. There were very few cases where he said, no, we're not going to ever do that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would disagree with you, Leo, is I think that by and large, Apple is better at shipping a more polished final product than this. I think this stands apart of them kind of eating it.
Is it really crappy?
Here's another complaint I have about Apple since we're bitching about Apple.
All right.
right. I have a brand new 27-inch monitor.
Sexy.
Brand new 27-inch iMac.
Yeah.
But look.
They don't match up. You know what? I'm glad you told me that because I was going to buy the exact same setup you just bought for the new studio because I thought they would match. Now I'm just going to use a TV set.
Yeah.
Well, use a TV set or get some Ergotron arms. Behind here, I have some Ergotron arms, and I'm going to work on that.
In fact, that was what we were just looking at. So there's a Visa. You could pull off the stand on the iMac, and then you can Visa mount something on there. Is that how?
Yeah, and then you're not set on the table anymore. Right. You're set on these arms, and you can arrange them. And also, you can use verticals. I'm going to get a second 27-inch monitor so I can do two vertical monitors next to my horizontal iMac.
You're not having children again, I take it.
No, why do I need I have three babies. So I don't need more, man.
This is Robert's solution for birth control. I'll just have three monitors.
There we go.
Three, and I have a fourth one over here and a Mac.
You don't want to take any chances, obviously.
Absolutely. And the 65-inch big screen, you know.
So that's going up. He's got a 50-monitor bacchanalia going on in his office.
My goal is to keep up with Leo, because Leo's getting this huge studio. I don't have that, so I'm going to have as much glass around me as Leo does.
You were going to have a long road to hoe after that studio opens up.
Actually, I'm going the other direction. We're going to have fewer monitors in my new office, my new studio, because I do want to have children. And if anybody is interested, just let me know. So, a couple of quick stories.
Leave your number on a Twit brick, which you can buy at bricks.twit.tv.
I'm buying one of those bricks, man.
Yeah. Good. I hope you do. I hope you all do.
Just one quick weird thing before we wrap up the Final Cut Pro thing. In fair is fair, Pogue did call the Final Cut 10 thing a bad launch and a botched launch. So
good.
Yeah.
Good. Good for you, David. what are you laughing at?
I just really want to know how you feel about David Pogue.
You know what, David, believe it or not, David's an old friend. I really like David. But I have to say, when I think Walt Mossberg and David Pogue, I just turn green with envy because apparently they're willing to do anything to keep Apple on their good side and get the free products.
Well, because they didn't hold up an iMac and record Steve Jobs in the...
Can you imagine David or Walt doing that?
No, of course not. Well, I mean,
isn't that what you do if you're a journalist? You try to get the story. You don't.
Well, and specifically one that has a live streaming network that is covering live.
They
and
don't
trying
really
to...
need to, do they?
No. They're there to write.
I think the measure of Walt's allegiance, and I've switched from Pogue to Mossberg, but the measure of Walt's allegiance.
Do you have to declare?
No, you don't. No. Yes, 8-ball in the corner pocket. Yes. In fact, Steve Jobs, 8-ball in the corner pocket.
No. I'm on Team Walt.
Team
Walt,
baby.
Mossberg! Ah,
I got the Pogue, man! So is the way he treated Steven Sinofsky of Microsoft when he was talking about Windows 8. It was just, now that we've seen the video, not a very friendly reception to Microsoft on the stage of All Things D. And I have to feel like it was just a little bit of bias, to be honest, on his part.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I think in general with journalism, we do ourselves a disservice as readers to think that anybody is truly objective. Everybody has their points of view. Everybody has their biases. And if you think that you can go to one place and just be like, well, they tell it like it is, then you're always going to be fooling yourself and you're always going to be disappointed at the end of the day. You read everything that you can and then make your own decision on it.
You agree, Om? I mean, I think you adhere to an extremely high standard of journalist integrity.
I don't know what, Walt and David do with or how they interact with Apple, but I think from my perspective, the way I see it, you just have to do the right thing, every single time. You're, as a writer, your only allegiance is to the readers. That's
yes.
it.
Yes.
That, sometimes, yes, you have your own biases and opinions. I mean, and you got to let people know that those are your personal biases and opinions, and that's all. People are smart. Readers are smart. They know... what to take, at face value and what to take with a grain of salt. I think we kind of tend to overgeneralize and, don't give readers that much respect. I personally believe that our readers are smarter than the writers themselves, period. That's the end of story, in my opinion. If you have to make sure that you're living up to their expectations every single time. And it doesn't have to be about a story, the facts, everything has to be measured in with that lens. You know, so sometimes, you know, you don't succeed, but most of the time you one has to aim for that. And I think that's what all our senior guys do, whether it's Pogue or, you know, Walt or, you know, Markov or you, or, you know, we've learned from guys like you. So we can't really say anything or the other way. I mean, that I've seen you guys, how you've done it, and I've basically taken a cue from all of you. So,
well, you've actually got done a great job.
Giga Ohm is fantastic. I'm a huge fan. Yep.
GigaOhm.com.
You know, we have to pay that forward too, right? Like, we have to always remind our younger writers that it's about the readers. I mean, they're the ones who pay the bills ultimately. Yep.
I almost want to print that on the wall. Who is our constituency? It is the user. It is our viewers, and that's who you serve. You don't serve anybody else. It's sometimes hard in trade press because you end up having such close relationships with the companies that you cover that you forget who you're really, you know, advocating for.
Yeah. Although I will say, I think it's great when people of stature go after other people of stature, because I think it does keep everybody honest. And I think it's good that we're always thinking about what is the information out there? How can it be dissected? And are we getting the best out of it? And I think that only happens when we talk about it.
You know, people are beating up on Walt right now, but it's fair to give Microsoft the tough time. They had the tablet. I sold tablets at Microsoft for 3 years, you know, long before the iPad came out, and it was always done half-assedly. And if you look at Windows 8 and look at the demos that they showed on screen, there was a lot of flash up front, but then they dug into Excel and it looked crappy again.
Yeah.
And that's where it dies.
Yeah.
And the bias that we all have in this industry, and it's a tough bias to sometimes discern, is we're surrounded by people who keep feeding us back, you know, what equipment is hot in this industry or not, or what's going on. And like, I just had a guy over at my house who used to be one of the guys at Microsoft that I look up to, or look at Charles Fitzgerald at VMware. Mm-hmm. All these guys are Mac users now.
Yep.
And so, you know, these are former high level executives from Microsoft. I used to work at Microsoft, and I'm look around. I have all Apple equipment. Yeah. There's a reason for that, and that bias comes through on stage.
The reason is because we can afford it.
Well, it's not just afford it. It's passionate. When I talk to audiences around the world who are tech passionates, they have Macs. They spend the extra money because it works better. If you don't care about your equipment so much, or if you can't afford it, then you're more likely to be a Windows user still. But
Chris Forsman, writing in the Infinite Loop column at Ars Technica, which is a great column, according to sources within Apple's supply chain, production for the MacBook Air will increase in July 17% over June and could increase as much as 100% for the third quarter. Apple is expecting incredible demand for this supposed MacBook Air model that they'll release with Lion, that'll be running Sandy Bridge, will have Thunderbolt, obviously, in it. They think the MacBook Air will be the computer of the second half of 2011.
Hey, when is this coming out?
Well, no one knows, do they? But
the chat room's going white hot on me right now. They are totally eating me up. But
that's why you're here, Robert.
Yeah, from the chat room in Kanye voice, Scoble doesn't care about Windows people.
No, I mean, go to VMware. They were 99% Mac. The whole engineering team. Go look at my photos of the Facebook engineering team. 95% Mac. Go to the Lyft conference. I had people raise their hands over in Geneva, Switzerland, a European conference, not in the Valley. 95% Mac. TEDx or TED, you go there, it's mostly Mac. I went to the World Economic Forum, and I counted a lot of iPads, a lot of Macs, not so many Dell machines, not so many PCs. So, you know, that's where my biases come from, and I can go more into why I buy Macs, but
you know, actually, it's interesting.
I'm getting the feedback from the industry itself, not from my own biases. Somebody says, oh, Rackspace competes with Microsoft. Oh, give me a break.
No.
Rackspace is a little pimple on Microsoft's ass in terms of
but
graphics.
It is a religious war. We don't want to get into
No,
you can never make anybody happy. But one thing we all agree on, you really got to burn that hat, Justin. It's just...
Oh, come on.
It's just really... I could smell it from here. So
come on. 2009 Cup champions, Pittsburgh Penguins, this end?
talk about burying the lead. What is the big news story of the week? The FTC filing antitrust action against Google. And did we get to it today? No, we didn't. We'll talk about it next week. Thank you. I don't know. Is there anything to say about this?
I don't know. It's Sunday, man. Time to chill out now.
Yeah, let's kick up our feet.
This is a story that's going to go for at least a decade, so we'll have plenty of time to talk about it.
The only thing I want to say about it is you know, Scoble's holding up the In the Plex book. If you haven't read that book, please read it. To me, the moral of it was, what happens if you have this audacious dream? It comes absolutely true beyond your wildest, you know, comprehension, and you know, then you have to deal with it. And I think that's what's happening right now with Google is, you know, they've followed their path, and it's, you know, there's complications to it.
It's a challenge.
It is.
It is a great book. We had Stephen Levy on This Week in Google about a month ago talking about the book. Some great stories in there. It's an amazing book. Well written. I agree with you on that. Thank you, everybody, for being here. There's a lot more news. We didn't get to all of it, but we did have a great time. And frankly, when you have people of this caliber on, well, with the exclusion of you, Jeff.
Of course. Justin, yeah, sure. Well, I was joking on Twitter that the guest panel was 2.5 men this week. So,
no, I love you. You're the greatest. Justin Robert Young, NSFW. Stay tuned. We're going to have a live NSFW with music coming up in just a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I just want to give a quick plug. Andrew Maines, we didn't get to talk about ebooks, but he's got a $1 ebook. If you like science fiction, it's brand new on Amazon. Just go to The Chronological Man. Just search for Chronological Man. If you like sci-fi, it's basically a Sherlock Holmes meets Tony Stark meets Doctor Who kind of story. You'll really, really dig it. So download that, The Chronological Man, on Amazon.
And I love this, and I hope you'll talk a little bit about this, but this is the thing to do now is these 99-cent, $1.99
ebooks,
they sell like crazy.
John Locke is a guy who it was the first million ebook seller. That was announced this week.
Amanda Hawking, she just signed a deal with St. Martin's Press. I mean, this is really the way to go. 99 cents, The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist.
And then also, speaking of audiobooks, Andrew Maine's first book, The Grendel Shadow, I did a audiobook recording for. You can download that at andrewmaine.com/books. And I just finished the audiobook, and boy, is it a monster. 8.5 hours for his full-length novel, Public Enemy Zero, which will be out this week. So check that out, andrewmaine.com/books.
Is he your best friend forever?
He's my BFF. Yeah, you know, it's like Chewbacca. Like, I owe him a life debt. So, you know.
Want to thank Robert Scoble for being here. The Scobalizer is always great, always interesting, always has something to say.
And hopefully all the Microsoft fans will let me back on the show.
Oh, come on. You know, we got a lot of heat because I also agree. I did give a free pass to Windows 8, and we talked a lot about it on with Dvorak a couple of weeks ago on Twitter and got a lot of heat. But you got to call a spade, and in this case, we don't know. We won't see it for another year and a half, but when it does come out, I think then we can deal with it. I agree with you. I think there's some problems for sure. Scobalizer.com, the place to go, but you got to see his videos at Building43.com. He does such a great job covering the tech industry. Inspiring stuff. And finally, the great Om Malik, who is easily the smartest man in tech today. Om Malik, remember that name. You can see him at a coffee shop and a nightclub and Amazon bookstore near you someday soon. You said it would happen. You said it would. GigaOm.com.
Throw your head over the wall, Om. Come on.
All right.
Double down.
Right. Thanks for being here, Om.
Thank you, Leo. It was, as always, a great pleasure.
You're one of my favorite Omies.
I'm glad I am.
All right. Hey, thanks for being here. Thank you all for joining us. Don't forget, we still got bricks to sell, lots of them. Don't send me a brick. I don't need you to send me a brick. When I say buy a brick, I don't mean buy it at your Arch and Supply Hardware and send it to me. I mean go to bricks.twit.tv and buy a brick, a commemorative brick. You put it up on the wall. It could say anything you want, and we'll have a wonderful foyer where everybody gets to visit their bricks, bricks.twit.tv. Last couple of weeks of our brick sale to help build the new Twit Brick House. We're very excited about this. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. I'm sorry, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's, 2200 UTC at live.twit.tv. But you know what? You don't have to worry. If you miss a show, You can always catch up with them at twit.tv. We've got live programming on almost all the time, and it's really, if you can, tune into live.twit.tv, because you never know what you're going to catch, like Andrew Main coming up in just a bit.
Yeah, on the NSFW show.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye, everybody.
Woo! This is amazing.